welcome to East Meets West. I'm Olga.
I'm Tara Reid.
Yeah, so first of all, happy Easter to our Orthodox viewers.
Friends, yes, yes. And Olga did a beautiful video. I loved your video that you did, and I've been spreading it around about how Russia celebrates Orthodox Easter. And what I've noticed about these two holidays, though, is that in America, Donald Trump seems to be posting on these very sacred holidays.
Terrible things.
Terrible things, yeah. And one of them was, well, of course, last week he was saying that he was going to destroy the civilization of Iran. Mm-hmm. And then this week he was comparing himself to Jesus, essentially, and then also attacking the Pope on Easter, Orthodox Easter, which was really... it's evil. I mean, there's no other word for that, but because of the language and how violent he's talking about, you know, destroying 92 million people in this country, where there are also many Christians as well.
Well, first of all, I can really not imagine that happening in my happening things like that in my own country, because for us it's more about the spirit. It's more mm-hmm. of a spiritual holiday yeah. rather than a pretext for promoting yourself.
Exactly.
So I can honestly not imagine my president doing anything like that. He attended the mass. That's all what we saw.
Yep.
So it's a sacred holiday. It's nothing. It's not about promoting yourself or self-marketing, definitely. But what surprises me here is that just 2 weeks ago, I guess, Marco Rubio, he was speaking about leadership of Iran as that mm-hmm. of religious fanatics. Mm-hmm. And now President of the United States is posting a picture where he looks like Jesus. Mm-hmm. And you saw these collective prayings in the Oval Hall that they're yes. they're holding. So for me, what is religious fanatism then if this is not? And as someone said, any accusation is a confession. So that's what my attitude would be to Trump's saying like that.
Yeah, and I mean, Tucker pointed out that if you notice, when you look back at the inaugural, Trump did not put his hand on the Bible when he took his oath, which is very, very telling, actually, now.
It's like, when that's everything's what kids unfolded. Do, you know, when they yeah. cross their fingers mm-hmm. when they lie, right? Mm-hmm. It's something like that.
Yeah. But, you know, this is affecting the whole world, not just because of the Strait of Hormuz, but just the absolute violence that's being unleashed by America and Israel. And so we're lucky today to have someone with us who knows a lot about what's happening and who's there on the ground.
Yeah, we're having Professor Mirandi, professor of Tehran University, who is just back from Islamabad, where he was attending the peace talks between the United States and Iran. Professor Mirandi, it's such an honor having you on our show. And first of all, I cannot help asking, how do you feel? Because there is a bounty on your head, $1 million bounty on your head. And we see the Washington Post and other media posting threats to assassinate members of the negotiation team, and you were flying to Islamabad and back. So honestly, how do you feel? Aren't you scared when you being an imminent and direct target?
Well, thank you both very much for inviting me. It's a great pleasure being on your show. Yes, it is quite extraordinary, the world that we live in. A bounty has been put on my head and promoted on X or Twitter. And despite the fact that many thousands of people complained and petitions were signed, Twitter refused to remove the tweet, or then, and of course, they refused to do anything about the account, which was and is verified.
I think they are even promoting it, because there is a message that just paid promotion. So Twitter is kind of promoting this assassination.
That's right. And no Western journalists, even though many know me, they've spoken with me over the years, no Western journalist has pursued this. No Western politician or government has been wondering how this could happen, how this is legal, or no one has condemned it. And so this is the world that we live in, where in the West they can call on people to be kidnapped and obviously tortured and murdered as a result, and this can be promoted and nothing happens. And also, you know, we saw the Washington Post and many other Western pundits during the last few days calling for the assassination of the Iranian negotiators. And to be very blunt, when we were on our way back from Pakistan, we were expecting to be hit by a missile. And the Iranians and the Pakistanis together, they devised a plan to make it more difficult. So we took a different route, and the planes, the plane that we were on was actually not the plane that we took going to Pakistan. Mm. And we made a sudden landing in the city of Mashhad, which is near the Afghanistan-Turkmenistan border. And from there, we took a train to Tehran. So, or some took the bus, some took a train. But in any case, in order to prevent the Trump or Netanyahu from shooting down the plane, they took those measures. So this is the world that we live in, that Western media calls for mass killings and assassinations, and bounties are posted online using social media. And of course, as we speak, they are carrying out a genocide in Lebanon, and Western media is looking away. They're repeating the genocide that they carried out in Gaza, in southern Lebanon. They're bombing the entire country. And of course, Western media, in order to enable this, and Western journalists, in order to enable the mass killing and the slaughter, they will either look away, as they often did in Gaza, or they would try to justify it. So when they would be bombing apartment blocks, slaughtering women and children, bombing ambulances, bombing medical centers, which they've been doing day and night, and slaughtering many medics, they would call these Hezbollah in their news, in their media, they would call them Hezbollah strongholds, mm-hmm. or Hezbollah targets.
They called correspondents terrorists, and for them that was enough to attack them. You remember just the group of correspondents Lebanon just recently? They just called them terrorists. That's right. Enough. They don't need anything else, you know.
Yes, actually, one of the young women who was murdered, a journalist for Al Mayadeen, I had met her before when I was in Lebanon. So these are the monsters that we're dealing with in the West and in our part of the world. And it is indeed an empire which has always been evil, but it is becoming increasingly sinister and crude in the way in which it carries out its policies. And the media no longer has this pretense of being the fifth estate or a means to make the leaders accountable. When it comes to when they were bombing Iran, if you watched media outlets that are opposed to Trump, you'd think that Iran launched the war. You would think that it was Iran that was to blame. Because when it comes to the empire, it doesn't matter if it's The Guardian or Breitbart, or whether it's Fox News or the BBC, they are all one and the same. They mm-hmm. support the aggressor, they support Zionism. And of course, Joe Kent said it all, basically, in his resignation letter, a Trump appointee, very high-ranking intelligence officer with access to all the information. He said, this war is about Zionism, the Israeli lobby, and the Israeli regime. That's all it was. And we all knew this, but now someone from the inside has said it.
You know, and on that note, there's been a lot of discussion that AIPAC, which is the lobbying organization in the U.S. that's funding a lot of these U.S. Congresspeople and senators, and of course have given money to Trump, That basically Israelis, the greater Israeli project or whatever their vision is what's taken over the U.S. foreign policy. But the U.S. and Israel seem to be one in the same. These talks that just happened, J.D. Vance called back to the U.S., to the president allegedly 21 times, didn't seem to have any kind of permission to actually have. Were these talks sincere, or was this just basically another tactic by the White House to kind of perpetrate fear and to Iran?
Well, when we were on our way to Islamabad in Pakistan, everyone on the plane was skeptical. Everyone. Mm-hmm. Everyone that I spoke to was deeply skeptical. And what happened in Islamabad confirmed that. The Iranian delegation had full authority. No one called Tehran, even once. Mm-hmm. And the people who needed to make the decisions were sitting there. And they had the authority. Ayatollah Sayyid Mujtaba Khamenei gave the Speaker of Parliament, Dr. Ghalibaf, full authority to make a decision or make decisions. Mm-hmm. But Vance, surrounded by two Israeli firsters, Witkoff and Kushner, who are both Zionists,
yes.
He was constantly, despite being surrounded by these two people and controlled by them, he, as you rightly pointed out, had to constantly make phone calls. And ultimately, while during the day it seemed as if some progress was being made, by the end of the day, it suddenly went very south. It went very sour. And it was obvious that he was told not to, that he couldn't do anything that would lead to any reasonable conclusion to the negotiations. And so it was expected that there would be more negotiations the next day. And then suddenly he goes and speaks to the press and leaves. So, and he starts blaming Iran. Whereas, you know, everything that he was saying was dishonest. That he spoke about Iran unwilling to distance itself from nuclear weapons. The Iranians have never been pursuing nuclear weapons. And again, if you go back to Joe Kent, he says this very openly in his resignation letter, that Iran was not pursuing nuclear weapons and that Iran is not a threat to the United States. So Vance is obviously lying because he's controlled, and they tell him what to do. He's not a real, he does not have real authority. So Iran left Islamabad. Of course, we're all waiting to have to be killed, because on the way back, even though they took precautions, but we were expecting to be hit, possibly be hit by a missile. But on the way back, we were discussing on the plane with one another what had happened, no one was surprised.
But Professor Morandi, initially, Trump had agreed to hold the talks and accepted the 10 principles, like the baseline principles that Iran was coming up with. I honestly think that he felt the smell of impeachment. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think he felt he was in the corner, so he was kind of forced after he played the nuclear weapon card. Mm-hmm. He had nothing to do, so he went for the talks. But then we hear again this argument about Iran and nuclear weapons, which honestly, I think for all of the viewers, for all of the ordinary people around the world, they already have this feeling, once Trump mentions nuclear weapon Iran, that's, he has no arguments whatsoever left. So what was the discussion? What was the substance? Because now he says that he will block the Strait of Hormuz. The United States would block the Strait of Hormuz. But it's actually the contrary to what they were planning to do, because they were planning to open the Strait of Hormuz, and now they're threatening to close it, right. And completely my brain breaks. I cannot not get how are they going to reach the goal by doing the contrary.
Welcome to American logic. Yeah. Okay.
Can you give us some inside information on all viewers?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think everyone is saying that, you know, that everyone is reminding one another that the Strait of Hormuz was open and it was business as usual until 40-some days ago, until Trump forced this situation upon the world. And what he is doing right now by trying to impose this blockade is that basically he's telling the rest of the world that I'm the boss. He's telling China that you're not allowed to have oil because I say so. He's telling the Indians that you're not allowed to have LNG because I say so. He's telling Africans that you're not allowed to have fertilizer because I say so. And so basically he's like this world emperor who's both a psychopath, but who's also losing his mind. Now, I don't know why he's like this, because he was never very normal to begin with. But I don't know. I mean, when Joe Kent put out that resignation letter and said this, the war is all about the Israeli regime and the Zionist lobby, I increasingly wonder if there is footage of him doing things to little girls or something like that, where he's so obedient to
Israel.
Zionists.
Now, I have a question about that. I had a question about that. Because Israel, one of the things that I heard, and I don't know if this is verified or not, is that one of the final calls that Vance made was not to the president, but to Netanyahu, which is shocking as an American that the vice president of the United States in the middle of a negotiation is calling another foreign leader
to get his
approval about a U.S. policy. I mean, if they were collaborating, it'd be one thing, and they are, but not in a good way. I mean, with the bombing of South Lebanon. Meanwhile, Trump has been saying that, and this was some confusion, if you could, the second part of this question, if you could talk about this. Lebanon's being bombed by Israel relentlessly, like you mentioned, in a genocide like Gaza, right? It's imitating the same pattern. Trump initially said that that would stop, and then he backtracked and said, oh, it wasn't included in the ceasefire, et cetera. Could you address both those things?
And if I may add to this question about Lebanon, what is really surprising for me is that, of course, it was the part of the initial ceasefire. Everyone knows it. Okay, he just tries to keep the face, but everyone knows it.
Right.
And the Prime Minister of Pakistan confirmed him that personally, that it was the part of the initial ceasefire. But what happened to Lebanon itself? Because it seems that the Prime Minister of Lebanon wanted to break the negotiation process in two different streams. Mm-hmm. And that's what I cannot get, because Iran definitely stands for Gaza. Iran stands for Lebanon. It's not just egoistic and individualistic. Iran stands for the neighbors.
Yeah.
But Lebanon is trying to arrange another format of negotiations separate from the one you just had. Can you give our viewers some thoughts on what's going on?
Yes, the ceasefire was agreed upon because it included Lebanon. And the Iranians didn't just say Lebanon, it said all areas across West Asia. They're a part of the ceasefire. But they mentioned Lebanon by name because of the ongoing genocidal strikes against Lebanon by the Israeli regime. So Trump is lying. And it's probably because Trump, like being the arrogant person that he is, he agrees to something and then he backtracks and expects the other side to accept. And that has been a model that he's been pursuing. For example, during the trade war, except for with China, all these other countries, they've been more or less kneeling in front of the emperor and appeasing him. And I think, and of course, his success in Venezuela, all this has made him even more arrogant. But the Iranians are not going to accept that. And that's why after the ceasefire, Iran did not agree to what they had agreed upon over the Strait of Hormuz to allow more ships through. I mean, Iran has never closed the Strait of Hormuz. Iran has opened it to countries who has kept it open for countries that are not a part of the assault against Iran. and Qatar, Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Kuwait, Bahrain, these countries are, they have blood on their hands. They have facilitated the war on Iran. They gave the U.S. bases, and they also allowed their airspace to be used, and also their territory outside of the bases to be used against Iran. But Iran had no problem with the Iraqi oil exports, or nor did Iran had problem with ships belonging to countries that were friendly, and they were passing through.
Yeah, without any toll, even.
Exactly. But in accordance with the ceasefire, Iran was going to allow more ships to go through. That would include those countries that have done harm to Iran. But Trump did not accept his promise. He tried to, again, being obedient to Netanyahu. He made a deal with the Iranians, and then he said, no, this is not a part of the deal. So the Iranians did not increase the scope of ships that could go through the Strait of Hormuz. And I think that this is the entire story, that the United States is controlled by a class of people that simply do not care about the global economy. They don't care about the United States. They care about the Israeli regime. And the Israeli regime, by launching this war and forcing the Americans to launch this war, they are harming people across the globe. India, whose prime minister has been trying very hard to take sides, choose the genocidal side, meaning Netanyahu, after all he's done in Gaza, in response, what has Netanyahu done to him? They're wrecking his economy. They don't care about the Indian people or the Indian economy. They'll wreck it, if they think it serves their interests. I don't personally think that any of this serves the interests of the Israeli regime, because the genocide has turned the world against it. And this war, which is creating global hardship, everyone sees it as something that the Israeli regime and the Zionists have been pursuing. And I think this is going to further harm them in the future. But this is the path that they've chosen. This is, they have complete disregard for the rest of humanity, because they are the chosen people. They are the master race, or the master people. And the rest of us are all Amalek. We're all subhuman to them.
But Professor Morandi, technically, militarily, how is he going to make it happen? I mean, the blockade. Because the Strait of Hormuz is very narrow. I think it's like in the narrowest parts, it's 5 kilometers wide. So even if they send an aircraft carrier there to the narrowest part, it will be an imminent target for the Iranians, right? And it's like a bottleneck, sending your aircraft carrier to the bottleneck. What else can he do? He already played the nuclear card. So technically, how can he make this blockade work? I honestly cannot get it. I think he used kind of all of the tools he had, no?
Well, I don't know what goes on in that head of his. And I don't think
no one does.
If anyone, I don't think anyone does. But you make a very good point. It's not just the Strait of Hormuz. He can't get anywhere near it, because Iranian missiles will strike. But this actually shows that he has no regard for Qatar or Oman or Saudi Arabia or Bahrain or Kuwait or the UAE, because he's basically saying no ships are going to come out of the Persian Gulf and through the Strait of Hormuz from them either. Instead of resolving the issue, he has made the issue even worse. And instead of decreasing the fuel and energy petrochemical and fertilizer crisis that we're seeing emerging across the world, instead of making it better, he's now going to make it worse. So these ships are not going to go through. Now, whether Iranian ships go through or not, I don't know. But if he, if an Iranian ship goes through and they approach it, I'm sure that Iranian missiles and drones will be prepared to use against the United States. So I don't know how that's going to play out. But this is a war against the entire global economy. He's targeting everyone in his arrogance. And I think it's because he's failed in the war. He lost in this roughly 40-day war against the Iranian people. And instead of seeking an off-ramp, he thinks that the only way forward for him is further escalation. And he's been doing that time and time again. And in the case of Lebanon, he is allowing the Israeli regime to carry out this genocide. And every, you know, this is going to ultimately, I think, bring the region back to another stage of violence, which, you know, that goes beyond the borders of Palestine or Lebanon. But and remember, the U.S. ambassador, to the Israeli regime, when he said that if the Israeli regime, in his interview with Tucker Carlson, if they take the entire region, it's okay with us.
Yeah.
This basically gives a green light for the, and I think this is has always been unofficial U.S. foreign policy, that this gives a green light to slaughter, to genocide, and to expansionism in all directions.
Yeah, and it shows that the fact that Israel broke the ceasefire, it shows that they've never been striving for peace, neither in Gaza nor in Lebanon. But what I wanted to make a note, honestly, wholeheartedly, is that I honestly think that in terms of the information war, Iran won with a landslide.
Yeah.
Everyone was thinking of Iran as of a conservative society, right? Conservatives sometimes goes with a bit of old fashioned. We have to put it honestly. But the way Iran is handling this information war, it's something that the world has never seen. Honestly, when the spokesperson of your parliament was traveling to Islamabad, and this picture of him facing photos of kids killed in Namab and saying, those are my my team coming with me for the talks.
Yeah.
I mean,
very powerful.
This is very powerful, very touching. Now, when you're Ebrahim Zolgari, when his video on TikTok, young girls call him a crush. I mean, I wouldn't call him a crush. I would definitely treat him with much more respect. But this very fact that Iranian officials are so appealing to global audience. I honestly, I have to shake hands of everyone who was taking part in the media war. I really think that Iran won this media war with a landslide.
Well, I think, you know, people across the world in general, they are decent. And they see, when they see something that is obviously so evil, and so unjust and so horrific and destructive, they see even through the strongest of narratives. Only evil people will continue to accept those narratives because they are evil. But you know, we've seen a sea change in the way in which people view Iran across the world, and that they've begun questioning all the narratives of the last 47 years. In fact, the last time I checked, a book called Going to Tehran by Flint and Hillary Leverett, who Tara may know, they both worked in the White House. They wrote this book saying that the United States has to move in a different direction and try to and come to terms with Iran. And they wrote about all many of the lies in the Western media and among Western elites that have been said about Iran in their book, Going to Tehran. And now it's become a bestseller. And even though it's like a few years old, it's a book I advise everyone to read, but it's now a bestseller in the United States. So by carrying out all this evil, what Netanyahu and Trump and the other Israeli firsters are doing is that they're destroying 47 years of hard work of anti-Iranian propaganda carried out across the Western media and, of course, across the media of these oil and gas-rich dictatorships that are in the American camp, from Qatar to Saudi Arabia to the Emirates and so on.
You know, it's interesting that you pointed out and you pointed out about the info war. But despite the info war, which Iran is winning, in my opinion, what's striking me is how the bombing of women and children have become so normalized in Gaza, now in South Lebanon, in Iran. I mean, this mass, it's become normalized somehow. Can you speak to that, and where are we going from here? Now, you've come back from the talks, obviously, they didn't
collapse,
move forward, they collapsed, but where are we going from here? And with that in mind, now Trump is pounding his chest, threatening again to bomb relentlessly. Israel is not on a chain, not on a dog leash, so it's free to do what it's doing with its greater Israel project. All of which, by the way, Professor, whom you know, Jeffrey Sachs, predicted 5 years ago. He predicted that this would happen, and he's right. But anyway, can you speak to that about just the normalization of the genocides and what's happening and where we'll go from here collectively?
Well, when Trump says he's going to obliterate Iran, when he says he's going to take Iran back to the Stone Age, when he says he's going to wipe out a civilization, and he's been saying these different things over the past few weeks, the wiping out of the civilization came last. Before that, it was Stone Age, going back to the Stone Age, and then before that, he was talking about obliteration. None of the Western media complained. No major Western journalists expressed outrage. You can look at their Twitter feed, whether they write for The Guardian or whether they write for Breitbart, whether they write for the Times in London or for the Washington Post. I mean, the Washington Post actually called on the assassination of the Iranian negotiators. So when it comes to empire, they're all the same. Mm-hmm. One outlet may be a bit more bombastic and the other more sophisticated, but by nature, there's no difference. This is truly, truly an evil empire. Yeah. And when they slaughter those 168 little girls, predominantly girls, there was no outrage in the United States. And the United States never even apologized for it. So this just shows, and the West never said anything either across Western capitals. And this, I think, indicates that where so-called Western civilization really is. It is really a menace to humanity, and it's a menace to the people of the West itself. Bringing about their own destruction, because the world, despite its so much energy and so many assets on wars and eternal wars, that they're going downhill. But, you know, you say Jeffrey Sachs said this. Well, Wesley Clark, after 9/11, was told that all this was going to happen. He, there are 7 countries in 5 years. I'm sure you recall it was a viral video. So after 9/11, they were going to take out 7 countries in 5 years, and the last was supposed to be Iran. Now that 5 years took a good 25 years, and the last was supposed to be Iran, and of course they failed against Iran. But that makes me rethink, or I think it should make everyone rethink, what really happened on 9/11.
Yes, that's a good point.
But Professor Morandi, I honestly think that what's happening in Iran, first of all, it changes the world, but at the same time, it reflects the changing world. Part one, as we've already discussed, Iran definitely winning in the information war. But secondly, it's for the first time that United States needs a mediator in the peace talks, right? I don't remember any other situation like that throughout dozens of years. So now United States are not setting the rules of a peace agreement, are not setting the rules. They need a mediator. This time it was Pakistan. Don't you think it's really shows, it reflects the changes that already, and Iran is a part of them, but also reflects those changes?
Yes, I think there are so many indications of change. And I think that really this war is a turning point, even though it's not over. I think that this is probably the most dramatic shift for the United States downwards since the Second World War, even more so than Vietnam for different circumstances. But Iran not only was able to protect its territory and prevent the United States from even occupying it, but throughout this period, it has been hitting back on all fronts. And it's not just the United States, it's a coalition of countries. The Israeli regime, of course, with all the equipment that the United States gives it, the Israeli regime is nothing without the United States. And all the West, they sanction Iran, they strangle Iran to help the United States, even though they are too afraid to get directly involved. And then all these regional proxies who work with the United States in the Persian Gulf, in the Arab world, even Turkey, the government allowed NATO AWACS jets to fly over to gather intelligence against Iran, and radar, U.S. radar installations to be used against Iran. And of course, it transports oil from Baku, cheap oil from Baku, to assist Netanyahu. He sends it to Israel. So even though the regime in Azerbaijan, Erdogan, these Arab family dictatorships, this huge coalition alongside the West, they all collaborated together to bring Iran down, they failed. And after 40 days, it wasn't Iran that sought the ceasefire. It was the United States.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that came to mind when you were talking about just what's happening in South Lebanon and the solidarity that Iran's holding with Palestinians, with Lebanese, with their neighbors and everything. Does Iran feel like they're getting the same amount? And I think Olga kind of asked this in a different way, but I guess I kind of want to come back to that. Because now we're moving forward, and now Iran is being a direct target. Trump is talking about doing boots on the ground. That's another thing that's coming up. He's talking about doing the draft. He's talking about looking at it longer.
He already broke his teeth, don't you think so? With the ground operation, no?
No. He's still talking about that. He's still talking about a draft starting in December. So he seems to be looking at this as a longer term commitment to trying to aggress Iran. What is your opinion? Do you think he's pounding his chest to try to get this economic gain to further help Israel? Or do you think he's running out of threats, so to speak, and will... And are the immediate neighbors really shoring up for Iran as well?
What I think is that he's probably done a lot of horrible things to little girls for him to be moving in this direction. I don't think there's any chance that he will succeed. Iran has shown its power. And I think that the United States is not the United States of 20, 30 years ago. And the world is changing, as earlier you both pointed out. The United States is declining while the rest of the world is on the rise. And the rest of the world is increasingly becoming intolerant towards this genocidal behavior and this... The constant slaughter and murder carried out by Washington and the regime in Tel Aviv. What I believe is ultimately going to happen is that U.S. proxies in the Persian Gulf region will collapse. They are not strong entities. They are family dictatorships, and they hold control over these countries partially because of wealth and partially because of the fact that with Western help, they're able to subjugate their own people. The United States is growing weaker, and the United States has completely ignored their interests in the past month and a half. Mm-hmm. The United States has only been focused on protecting the Israeli regime, and it has become clear to people that these family regimes that are proxies of the United States, that their only role is to help the United States protect the Israeli regime. So I think increasingly, if this conflict continues, the potential instability for those regimes in the Persian Gulf increase. And also I think the global reaction against Trump will also rise. But also in addition, and this is something where you probably would be able to say much, much more than I, the problems in the United States for Trump, the Zionists, Netanyahu, and the Israeli regime will increase. And already people, even in the United States, across the world, this has already happened, but it is also taking place in the United States that people are turning against Zionism. They're turning against the Israeli regime. And major figures, even within the MAGA movement, they're turning away from this monstrous ideology of supremacism. And so I don't think in the long run that Trump or Netanyahu will succeed.
Yeah, I honestly think that impeachment may be even closer than yes. on the horizon. But what we really need to ask you is to take care, because, you know, it's not just rhetoric. We see the things that they're doing, so those are also actions, unfortunately.
And we'll post rhetoric. The change.org petition to take down that bounty. You know, we'll put that for our audience. You know, because that's just horrific that it's still sitting on Twitter. And I'm very sorry
to see that. Now in the 21st century, people can do fundraising for a bounty on someone's head. That's unacceptable. Yeah. But thank you. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you for your courage that you flew to Islamabad despite, you know, those direct threats that you are receiving. Mm-hmm. Such a courage. As all of the Iranians, we saw live chains, you know, of people standing on the bridges and surrounding power plants when they were threatened to be directly bombed by the United States, you know. So Iranian people are really courageous ones. Yeah. So
thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank
Definitely
you.
Our
Great honor being with
both of you. With you.
Be safe.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
And to our viewers, please stay in touch with us on our social media pages. Mm-hmm. Please send us your guest suggestions. You already do, but keep on doing that. It's really helpful. And we'll try to keep you in the loop of what's going on around the world.
Yeah, follow us on X and Telegram. And like I said, we'll be putting some of that information about Professor Morandi so you can give him support and get that taken down on X, that terrible thing that was there. In the meantime, stay safe, everyone, and peace out.
Take care. See you.